Pastor instead, I'm going to be talking some about a particular child survival project, this one in Mozambique, to give you a bit of depth on a particular project, look at some of the structure of it, some of the reasons why we think it's important. I wanted to tell you a little bit about our organization first. We're a nonprofit, faith-based organization with headquarters in Phoenix. I relate to our Washington office, and we work in 26 of the poorest countries. We're currently managing four USA Title II projects, a PEPFAR ABY grant, and we also have some USAID-funded expanded impact child survival project in Mozambique. That project is based on the results and the model from using this care group approach within a Title II project. And although it was a Title II project, it was set up exactly like we set up our child survival projects in terms of the health component of it. We've had a proven record of dramatic reductions in child mortality, and this model is one of the reasons that we're excited about working on child survival. In terms of the program background, this was the USA Title II project. We had two DAPs, DAPs, which is a Title II project, one from 98 to 2001, and then a second 2002 to, I believe that should be, 2007. They had an extension on that one. The mortality study that we're going to be talking about straddled the period from 1999-2000 to 2003-2004, so across two different projects but with very similar design. The area of the project, I'll show you in a map in a second, was Nyamatanda, Maromeo, Gorongosa, and Kaya districts of Sofala Province, Mozambique. And we're now scaling it up to the 10 districts within within a USA Child Survival and Health Grants program, so we're taking this to scale there at a regional level. The prime objective of the project was to decrease chronic malnutrition in children 6 to 59 months of age, and also we had other behavioral objectives, things like some of those more successful interventions that Jim talked about, exclusive breastfeeding, persistent breastfeeding, ORT use, feeding during diarrhea, DPT-3, those were a couple of our indicators. And the interventions were child survival interventions, nutrition, control of diarrheal disease, acute respiratory infection, malaria, safe motherhood, and HIV. And one of the nice things about this model is it can accommodate a lot of different interventions. This project has outpaced other Title II PVOs in Mozambique in terms of reductions in child malnutrition, and the speed of behavioral change was another thing that excited us about this particular model. This is the Sofala province, Mozambique. You see the red circle there, so kind of in the middle. I should mention Gaza province down there in the south. World Relief has also published data on mortality reductions using this model in their child survival program using care groups. And Ambrosi Edward came to Mozambique. We worked with Johns Hopkins to do this study. And they did a study both in Gaza province, which has been presented, it's getting ready to go for publication now, and also in Sofala province, which we have not published this data yet, but we're presenting to you today. So what is the care group model? In this model, you have groups of 10 households that you set up through an initial census. And those households have children under 5 years of age. One leader mother is elected by the mothers in that 10-household group to be a leader mother, and she will represent and do health promotion with the mothers in her group. Those 10 leader mothers get together on a regular basis. In this project, it was bi-weekly. Some other projects in other countries, it's monthly. We're planning on doing it weekly in some places. The mothers come together in a care group. And through that, they receive, actually that should say, 52 hours of training each year. It's 2 hours every 2 weeks that those leader mothers, 10% of all the mothers with children under five, get together for health promotion and for learning. Then they go out and they do health promotion and promoting behavior change with beneficiary mothers. And so those beneficiary mothers receive about 13 hours of training each year. That's an individualized household visits of about 15 minutes each. We think that's one of the reasons for the success of the model is we are in the households on a regular basis, and it is quality one-on-one tailored messaging. The cornerstone is really the volunteer. They're not trained to deliver curative services beyond really ORS, so a lot of focus was on prevention and on behavior change at the household level. There's also a promoter that meets with about 10 care groups every 2 weeks, and that promoter is then responsible. In this project, they're responsible for 10 different groups, so they would every day go to a different group within that 2-week period. The turnover of the care group leader mothers has generally been very low, and I'll give you some data on that in a little while. So what happens, and the last one was most training of this care group members can be done at the community level, so that really keeps your costs low in terms of doing health promotion and training. Now what happens in the care group meetings, this is a picture of one of those meetings. You have reporting of vital events and illnesses, reporting on progress and health promotion, some troubleshooting going on between the mothers. They do a demonstration with a flip chart of this week's 2 to 3 health messages. So you keep the number of messages low. They have a group reflection on the messages, and then they do practice in pairs. It gives the promoter a chance to actually supervise them how they would do health promotion and behavior change communication, give them feedback right in the group. There are other social activities, songs, dramas, and games that make it a lot more interesting for women. And I think these small, frequent meetings is probably one reason for the success. There's empowerment of the mothers. There's real ownership. We're contrasting this with when you have a single community health worker working with maybe 30 mothers or maybe even a larger number, giving one talk to all of the mothers. This is a very different model from that, and we think the way you go about doing that communication is central to your success. What about after the care group meetings? Each woman, after the care group meetings, visits her 10 households in the following 2 weeks. Each woman educates her mothers on the key health and nutrition messages for the week, and they have a small black and white flip chart. So that's one of the big costs of the program, is you do have to provide those materials. But we find by giving them some actual materials to use, they're able to be more systematic in how they go about doing this. They're mostly pictorial, so that helps in areas with low literacy. Those key messages of the week are almost always discussed. But the care group members can work on mothers' current concerns as well. So if you show up at a house and you have a child with diarrhea, she'll diverge from that week's messages and talk about the situation at hand and help that mother. The promoter supervises these home visits by the care group members, so often doing the care group meeting in the morning and then going out in the afternoon to visit one or two of them actually doing health promotion at the household level. They use a quality improvement checklist to make sure they're doing it properly and encourage them in their work. What about services provided through this care group structure, aside from the health promotion? There are a couple of other services, deworming of all children twice a year, vitamin A supplementation. Some projects do community IMCI consultations. This particular project did not. So keep in mind that community IMCI, in terms of being formalized and training someone for the entire WHO training, was not done as part of this, and we still achieved quite a bit in terms of mortality reduction. They coordinate with the Ministry of Health for provision of immunizations, clinical management of childhood illnesses, but it wasn't the focus of this project. It was mainly on behavior change at the household level. Okay, in terms of our survey methods, the 1997 baseline and 2001 knowledge, practice, and coverage surveys were developed using the KPC models from the Child Survival Technical Support Group and the CORE Group. We've reported on that actually earlier. The pregnancy history questionnaire was used, we used a birth history questionnaire that was used in the most recent Mozambique 2003 survey. So we started with that, turned that into a pregnancy history questionnaire, and background variables on socio-demographic characteristics were included. Standard procedures were followed for ensuring the validity of the translation from English to Portuguese. There was cause of death information in that survey questionnaire, but that has not been analyzed so far, so we can't give cause-specific mortality rates, just the overall mortality rates. For sampling, there were 300 mothers in the KPC, which we actually reported on those behavioral changes earlier, and then they did regular monitoring with too large of a sample, in my opinion, actually, 1,430 mothers. And then a final KPC had 435 mothers using cluster sampling. The pregnancy history questionnaire, they had 1,000 households in Sofala that were included in that. And I can provide you additional information on that during the question and answer period if you want more details on the sampling. In terms of how the training data collection analysis were done, the pregnancy history survey was conducted jointly. We had the District Ministry of Health, the National Institute of Statistics, and the Child Survival Project staff. They went out in six-person teams, four interviewers, one supervisor, and a driver, very similar to the DHS survey. So if you trust the DHS process, this was very similar to that in terms of the process used for this. Data entry and analysis was done by the National Institute of Statistics following standard procedures, double data entry, consistency checks. And there's a very high response rate since the volunteers assisted the survey team in locating the selected women. In Gaza province, they actually measured that. It was over 95% in terms of their response rate. In Safala, they didn't actually enumerate it, but they said that it was about as high as it was in Gaza from their experience. The KPC and anthropometry study was presented at the 2004 meeting, but in general, there are large and rapid change in key child survival interventions and behaviors. This is just a couple of slides to remind you, if you weren't at that meeting, ORT use went up from a baseline level of right around 25% to 100% actually during the project, dropped a bit. The final KPC, that bar, this was from monitoring data. We did these mini KPCs, and the final bar there is the final KPC where they use a more rigorous sample, so it sort of corroborates that it had risen quite dramatically from baseline. Exclusive breastfeeding went up from about 45% up to about 85% during the life of the project. And that was under 4 months, which was a recommendation at that time. We're now measuring under 6 months. Vitamin A distribution began in the second year of the project and shot up very quickly. Diarrhea prevalence also, this was only measured yearly, so you have to take it with a grain of salt, but it showed that diarrheal prevalence had actually dropped quite significantly during the life of the project. And also malnutrition, these boxes are the confidence intervals around that. We had a 48% decrease in severe stunting in children 6 to 23 months of age from baseline to final. So we cut that in half. Moderate and severe malnutrition actually dropped by about 25%, so about a quarter reduction there. And now the most important changes were in terms of mortality. Mortality in this area, deaths in preschool children, the under 5 mortality rate, dropped from 107 per 1,000 to 41 per 1,000 within that 4-year period. Then we also disaggregated looking at the infant mortality rate and the child mortality rate, 12 to 59-month-olds. Go up one. Yes, this was the infant mortality rate, so it dropped from 66 to 38 per 1,000. That jump in year in the 2002-2003 year, we believe is due to the severe drought that they're experiencing that year in southern Africa. But the more impressive results, when we pulled it apart, that was a 42% decrease in the IMR. We also looked in deaths in children 12 to 59 months, and there was a 94% decrease in the child mortality rate there. We know that's hard for some people to accept, that sort of drop. Rural Relief had trouble publishing their paper that they did on their mortality drops because a lot of reviewers said that your data just looks impossible. We haven't seen changes like that. But I think sometimes we have to say, look at the process used to collect the data, believe the data if that's what you're getting, and just look behind it to say, what are you doing differently here that made the difference? We compared this. We didn't have comparison groups, but we did look at the project data versus the DHS data. And we had a 3 times better drop in the under 5 mortality rate, twice as good in terms of the infant mortality, and 3.6 times higher in the child mortality rate. And we're actually comparing something a bit different, the under 5 mortality rate versus the probability of death is what they look at in the DHS. But you see, one is a 4-year change in our project versus a 6-year change in the DHS. And even with that difference in a couple of years, we still far outpace the results in terms of mortality reduction. The cost Is this a costly project? Not really. Very close to what Jim was talking about in terms of the $5 per beneficiary per year. It was $450 per beneficiary per year. We have since then made changes to the project. We saw such a rapid change that we said, let's work intensively with mothers for 2 years. Then we'll move to a new area and leave some of our staff behind to continue meeting with these groups, and that would allow us to drop our cost per beneficiary to $3.21 per year. Other evidence of the success of the care group model, World Relief found a 49% reduction in the IMR and a 42% reduction in the under 5 mortality rate in their care group project from March 2000 to February 2003 in Gaza province, and that is going to publication pretty soon. I should also mention, if I didn't before, that Bracey Edward is my co-author on this, and she's also a co-author on that particular paper. So who is using care groups? Those are a couple of the organizations using them and where they're using. The core group provided a Fusion of Innovation grant, which allowed this project, allowed the projects using care groups to publish a manual on how this is done, which you can get at coregroup.org and look at the Diffusion of Innovations link. A lot of other organizations are now picking this up and beginning to use it. What about sustainability? Always a big question, and frankly, one of the most exciting things about this model that I've seen is the sustainability. They had 1,457 volunteers active at the end of World Relief's care group project. We continued to work in the area, so we couldn't really measure how it was sustainable. But World Relief left their area after the end of the project, returned after 20 months, and then they returned after 30 months, and they did surveys to say what were the results that lasted. They found in talking, they also went to these groups, found out who was still going out and doing health promotion. 93% of those mothers were still active 20 months after the project ended. Communities replaced about a third of those. The other mothers in the group trained them in how to do health promotion. And women in half of the households said that they had visited their household within 2 weeks. So the health promotion continued. What about the results? Results continued as well. That first dot there is end of project. The first black dot you see, that's at the end of the project where they were with ORS treatment or use of ORS. And you see the second dot is at 20 months and the third at 30 months. And the rate of ORS use actually went up after the end of the project. These mothers continued working on it and were successful. Another one, children 12 to 23 months, completely vaccinated, also went up dramatically in the life of the project and stayed high after that. And World Relief has about 15 graphs that look very similar to this with different indicators. This is another example of a child survival project. The FOCUS project in Haiti shows a very large decline too, 188 per thousand to 66 per thousand under 5 mortality rate in one project area, and a drop of 68 to 47 in another. So our conclusions are that implementation of this health program focused on child survival outcomes resulted in extensive behavior change and improved health service coverage and utilization. And dramatic declines in mortality happened, as evidenced by this pregnancy history data. Attribution is difficult, but we did compare it to the DHS, so you can see that there's quite a big difference between these declines and other declines in the same area. We're currently seeking funding for more rigorous and scaled-up trials of the care group model. And NGO-led food security and child survival health programs using effective methods that focus on the household and especially on behavior change can bring about and help bring about the Millennium Development Goal number 4 being achieved.